You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Did you call game? I called game.
Gilbert, fade away.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Ben Standing here with another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. I hope you guys can hear me okay. I'm actually recording this part of the podcast out at Nats Park here for Nats Cubs. If you ever have a chance, for whatever it's worth, to talk, to speak with Cubs manager Joe Maddon, highly recommend it. I just got to do that as part of the media contingent. Always a fascinating guy. Talked about Max Scherzer's numbers are cartoonish. Talked about the art of fouling off pitches, talked about, and he did it in a way that's just so interesting to hear. He talked about the Cubs, I guess, going to be visiting the White House tomorrow and what that means for him as an American beyond politics. Really interesting conversation. I only say that because it just happened a few minutes ago, and I don't really like, part of my duty sometimes coming out to baseball games is dealing with the visiting locker room. I don't like doing that at all. I don't cover baseball much, as you guys no, I guess. It's not part of what I'm doing here for Locked On Wizards. It's not what I do with Redskins coverage. So it's a complete one-off, and it's typically boring, and I don't really follow baseball like the way I did when I loved it as a kid. But Joe Maddon, always fascinating. In any event, also fascinating is what's going on with the Georgetown men's basketball team situation. The bulk of this podcast is, in fact, about that. I spoke with Andrew Geiger from Casual La Jolla last night, meaning Monday night. So we talked about the fact that Georgetown finally named the assistant coaches officially 3 months after Patrick Ewing was hired. I'll get into that. If you're into what's going on with the Georgetown program, I think you'll find it highly entertaining. If you're interested in how the Patrick Ewing era is starting off, I think you'll enjoy it as well. If you're not that guy, that girl, that's not your cup of tea, I'll give you a couple nuggets here. And then I would suggest, if you missed it, go back and hear my podcast that I did with ESPN's Kevin Pelton. That's going to be probably the big free agent off-season preview that we're going to end up doing here to some degree. Kevin and I got into a lot of different topics. What is the value of Otto Porter? What could the Wizards possibly get in a trade for Marchand Gore Todd? Do they have to really start focusing on making John Wall happy now? And of course, who are some free agent targets for the Wizards to consider? So I definitely recommend all that. Now, I'm not going to not give you at least a couple moments here of something. So let's just do that. First and foremost, while it's on my mind, the Wizards announced today that Tim Frazier, the new point guard, will meet with the media on Wednesday afternoon. I anticipate being part of that conversation, so I will play some of that for you guys on tomorrow's podcast, I hope. I can already tell you right now, I'm back out here for Nats Cubs tomorrow. Tomorrow may end up being a late night for me, so we'll see how that goes with getting a timely podcast up, but hopefully we'll get something up. And I also am working on something to cap the week, having to do with free agency, trying to get some of my friends who have been helping out here over the whole season with talking about the Wizards, trying to get some different people involved to give a take on the Wizards situation. So hopefully I'll have that up later in the week. That'll be a little more free agency talk. what else can I tell you? Kelly Oubre was at the Mystics game I was at earlier today. Didn't see him or didn't talk to him. He was sitting way on the other side of the court when I was out there and didn't feel like bothering the young man. I saw that he was doing Fashion Week or Fashion something earlier this week up in New York, or he's going to. I don't know. I don't really keep track of all that stuff. If you've met me, you know I'm not exactly Mr. Fashion over here. So good for him that he is, but whatever. In any event, he was there, meeting at Verizon Center today. I did also see Daniel Oshefu and Chris McCullough. They were looked like they're about on the verge of about to work out, but they were having a conversation with a couple of the Wizards brass while I was there, including Ernie Grunfeld. But they were doing their thing, so I stayed away from them. They will be, of course, part of the Wizards Summer League team, and Oshefu, McCullough, and Sheldon Mack, you know, they're probably the true headliners for this Wizards team, especially since there's no other draft. They didn't have any draft picks this year, and those three were on the roster. As I reported yesterday, Daniel House is expected to be on the Summer League roster. That's, of course, an interesting name who was with the team a year ago. Now, some of the other interesting names, though, are some of the undrafted free agents that the Wizards added to their Summer League roster. Now, obviously, two guys who've been, if there's headliners of that undrafted free agent group, probably Devin Robinson from Florida State and Michael Young from Pittsburgh, two small forwards. What I've gathered so far is that the Wizards are intrigued by their two-way potential, and they are, I think, going to definitely be given every shot to stand out and potentially be, you know, this year's Daniel House, who impressed them enough to have them throw some guaranteed money his way to ensure that he would be with them, at least for NBA training camp, and then obviously on good enough to make the roster. So I think Devin, again, you may have already thought this. You may be going, dude, what are we talking here? Just saying, from what I can gather, those are two guys who were definitely intriguing for the Wizards. And, you know, when you're talking, you know, with Mac, Oshefu, and McCullough, you could easily say they're the 13th, 14th, and 15th player on this team. You could also say that, depending on what else the Wizards do in free agency, they may need at least one or two of them to step up higher into the rotation, therefore leaving spots open in the back end. Robinson and Young could be guys to consider. Also, you know, this is the year that two-way contracts with the G League, I got to remember to say, are in play, so a little more roster flexibility there as well. So I think those are two guys to consider. Couple other things here. So let's get to some other Wizardy stuff. I guess the news came out after I did the podcast with Kevin Pelton. Mark Spears of the ESPN did an interview with John Wall, in which John Wall said he's recruiting Paul George. Interesting. On a few fronts. One, back when the season ended, he told us he wasn't going to recruit anybody. So there's that. Two, doesn't recruiting a guy who's not a free agent doesn't really mean that much. Paul George could go to Indiana and say, I want you to definitely trade me to the Wizards, and they could tell him, hey Paul, guess what, bite me. The Pacers have all the control. Paul George's already put them in a bad spot. Presumably Indiana can get a much better package than anything the Wizards could offer realistically from either Cleveland, i.e. Kevin Love, or the Celtics with all their draft picks. So look, it's intriguing. Nobody likes Paul George more than me. If you could figure out a way to get him on the Wizards with Wall and Beal, it would be all kinds of exciting. But I just don't see how that's feasible. I think I said this before, a package of Gortat, Kelly Oubre, and a 2018 first would probably be about as most as I could conceive of giving up for a one-year rental. Even if Otto Porter was willing to take less money in the signing trade, which is what he would have to do, I still don't know that I would do that, because, again, we're talking 1 year of Paul George versus, you know, 4 years or so of Otto Porter. I just don't see that being the wise play. The only question is Kevin Pelton and I discussed, is where's John Wall's head at? Is he going to be all kinds of pissy if they don't make that kind of big move, regardless of the reality of what the Wizards can or can't do? I guess you maybe then have to consider all options, but you know, Kevin and I talked about that aspect of as well. If you didn't hear that part of the podcast, I thought that was a good section there. So, anyway, so interesting to hear John Wall say he's down with the recruiting. Just, I'm shrugging my shoulders here. It just doesn't mean anything in practical terms. And again, Indiana should have much better offers than whatever the Wizards could potentially offer up. Speaking of John Wall and the Wizards, last night the NBA awards were finally announced. I thought the show was sort of ESPYs-ish. It was okay, kind of weird. I don't know, a little anticlimactic it seemed to me a little bit with the awards. But hey, it's the first year. We'll see where things go. Russell Westbrook wins MVP. No big surprise there. John Wall came in seventh. Seventh isn't first. It's not even top five. But I mean, that's the highest you had anybody from this franchise be in the running for the MVP in decades, I believe. So good on John Wall. Congrats to him on that. Ernie Grunfeld finished fifth in the executive of the year voting. Otto Porter, I believe, was fourth in the most improved player, with Bradley Beal was right behind him. So no awards for the winners, for the Wizards. Got a little bit close at a couple spots. It's not nothing. Again, combined with the four, you know, with the showing, with the 49 wins during the regular season, one game away from the Eastern Conference Finals, those votes show that people were paying attention. The Wizards had a very good year. I feel sometimes like we talk about them in the offseason, people are beyond frustrated with them, which I get on some level. But again, let's remember, we're talking about a team that had their most wins since the 70s. So anyway, well, of course, we'll move on from the past. It's time to focus on the future, and that, I think, is where the frustration kicks in. Anyway, let me end it there with this. Like I said, if you missed the interview I did with Kevin Pelton from ESPN, I definitely recommend going back and listening to that. Otherwise, if you're interested in the Georgetown program, you want to hear what's going on with Patrick Ewing, the Thompson family, and a whole bunch more, I suggest keep it tuned right here. I'll get into this right now, talking about the Georgetown men's basketball team and the newest situation there involving the coaching staff and recruiting. What we're going to talk right now is a little Georgetown basketball because, one, that's what I do sometimes, as you guys have heard on this podcast, and two, today, June 26th, the Hoyas finally announced the three assistant coaches for Patrick Ewing, the three that will help him recruit. This is not news, per se. Ewing was hired almost 3 months ago, and we've kind of known some of this, but they officially put it out today, just these three names. That in and of itself is interesting. That they waited so long is interesting. There's a lot interesting here. Here to help me go through what's interesting and what's curious is Mr. Casual La Jolla himself, Andrew Geiger from CasualLaJolla.com. We tried to get Bobby Bancroft on with us. Alas, his cell phone service would not cooperate. So, Andrew, we are going to both discuss this and also try to channel Bobby's, I think, frustration with the situation. First and foremost, how are you doing? Are you feeling particularly casual this evening on the day that we finally learned who the assistants are officially?
Well, you know, I don't know what the opposite of doing backflips is, but I'm not quite there. I can understand why people might be frustrated, because the reality is we've known a lot about these three names for a long time. And I think those who were kind of expecting a flashy hire, a new name, as a reason for the lack of any formal announcement were probably very disappointed today.
Yeah, I mean, I went back and looked. I put up a little blurb up on CasualHoya.com, and I went back because I was like, wait, when did we first hear about these announcements? And I looked, and the first report of a Louis Orr hire was just 8 days after Ewing was hired. Ewing was hired like April 5th or 6th. Then Robert Kirby was like a week after that. So we've known basically since at least late April about two of these guys. And then Waheed's been out there for seemingly a while as well, that he was likely staying on in some capacity, and he's going to stay on as the assistant. So it's just sort of bizarre that they wait all this time to tell us that, or tell us as in society. I don't know the reason. And by the way, what makes it even weirder, it's been spoiled not by inside sources, it's been spoiled by the recruits that they've been after, who've told us stuff, who tweet out pictures of these guys recruiting them. So it's just weird to me that they wait. And part of what's frustrating to me about that is it's a sign of nothing is changing, perhaps, on the PR front for Georgetown. This is what would have happened previously under the JT3 era and so on. So to me, as from my reporter point of view, but also just from a what are you guys kind of doing point of view, it's a little frustrating, I think, to see the same patterns repeat itself with this, you know, potential, you know, with this new change of the guard. Is it maybe not so much of a change of the guard in a lot of different ways?
Yeah, look, I think there's no surprise there, though, right? I mean, it's knowing the way Georgetown operates, I think it would have been completely shocking if there was any other way that this announcement was revealed, or timing of it. But assuming things are going to remain the way they have been, which I think is a pretty safe assumption, given who's still around, I think what we really want to focus on, though, is who's on the bench and not so much who's delivering the news as to who's on the bench. Kirby, great. I mean, if you want, let's just go down the list. I think Kirby's a rock solid hire. Obviously, he did great job with when he was here previously with JT3. He opened the door to the South. He's got connections everywhere. And I think it's been shown in a lot of the guys who have visited since the Ewing hire that he's pretty effective in getting guys to campus. Lewis Orr, obviously he has a lot of coaching experience. Obviously Ewing considers him a confidant. I think he's going to be a great addition to the staff in that respect. Do recruits know who Lewis Orr is? Can he, recruit effectively? That remains to be seen. But do I see his value on the bench? Absolutely.
And by the way, I think that part is key, because we talk so much about recruiting. You do actually, once you get the players, actually have to do the X's and the O's and know the rules. And that's where, Ewing, having not coached on this level, that's where a guy like Louis Orr comes in and help guide him. And that's, I think, a totally reasonable hire from that perspective. What it means for recruiting, I'll say this just to, and I'll let you then get to Waheed, but I think we've talked about this before in a different podcast. When Mark Turgeon took over in Maryland, he seemingly sent all of his three assistants out on the road constantly to recruit. And one thing that people said to me was they didn't have enough people back at home to actually help the players they have get better. And I think we saw with the team they had last year, the guys who were there need some coaching. So, I don't have an issue of Orr is more of the homebody who, deals with the recruits if they're on campus and so on. And the other two guys are the bird dogs. But anyway, get to
and that's noted. I think with Waheed, he's really the wild card here, because he was with the team last year. My understanding, he's a really good coach. He's both a good X's and O's guy, and he's a good recruiter as well. Obviously, he has some local ties. He's a DC native, went to Gonzaga, all that's good stuff. He's been with the NBA, with the Oklahoma City Thunder. He's got a lot of experience. A lot of people wanted a flashy DMV recruiter, pretty much what we had in Broadus, or some of the guys that we were going after, the Kenny Johnsons of Louisville, or some of the other rumored guys at Tony Skin, Shimon Williams, what have you. Waheed is going to give off the impression of some sort of, when you struck out at all your number one guys, you ended up with him, some sort of, well, he was there before and now he's back, so great. But I kind of like him. I think that he obviously has a lot of good experience with guards. I think guard play is going to be key in Ewing's offense. And it really remains to be seen. I mean, maybe he needs some time to kind of blossom into that killer DMV recruiter, and this is really his opportunity.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're right. I say this all the time in other sports when, if I'm dealing with the Redskins and, they lose the defensive back coach and people have a cow over that. Oh, how'd they let that guy get away? I'm like, you don't know. What do you know? You don't know what that guy was doing. And for right now, that's kind of how, you don't know where that guy, starts and the defensive coordinator or the head coach or the players themselves begin. It's kind of how I feel with Waheed. I mean, he was relatively new, but also, it's all a mystery now with Ewing on a lot of levels. They got to help set Ewing up to for him to act sort of, I guess, as that closer. And, JT3 brought him in for a reason. JT3, I don't think was a fool in that regard. So presumably he's got some reasons that he liked them, and, Ewing did as well. So I also don't think it's a bad thing to have. I mean, I'm talking about changing the guard, but I don't think it's bad to have some continuity, because look, again, we keep talking about recruits. You still have all these guys from last year, Govan, Derrickson, Caleb Johnson, Mulmore, and so on. So, having somebody there that they're familiar with is not a bad thing to go. And this guy, like you said, he does have ties to the area. I think that's all reasonable. So at the end of the day, you're right. It's none of these were wow hires. I don't think anybody's going, oh, no, wow, Georgetown just flipped the script on everything. They did that with Ewing, if nothing else, right? I mean, Ewing is the game changer. The coaching, the assistants are, we'll see.
It is, and at the end of the day, who your third assistant is and who your second assistant is really isn't going to change the tenor or the course of a program. What it comes down to is the head guy and your head guy's ability to close recruits. I don't think JT3 was especially good at that towards the latter part of his tenure at Georgetown. It remains to be seen what Ewing can do. You know, it appears since taking the job, he managed to prevent a mass exodus, or if a mass exodus is going to happen, we don't know. But he kept some of the key guys, and he's locked in some guys for next year. You know, holding on to Walker, getting Dickerson, getting Blair. You know, all these guys will contribute next season. And I think regardless of who was going to be on this bench, the fan base has accepted that this upcoming season is going to be a struggle. So I don't think a flashy recruiting assistant was going to change all that. Now moving forward, who knows? But I'd like to see what these guys can do on the trail.
I want to get into some of those players as well, because that's important too. But let's just sort of wrap up this coaching announcement today with this part. They only announced the three assistants, and that's not nothing. That's interesting. And the other people that they hypothetically could name up the positions, the director of player ops, the assistant player ops, who was the last? That was what, Patrick Ewing and Jonathan Wallace in those roles, right?
Right.
So that has yet to be announced. We know that Patrick Ewing Jr. can't be there because of Georgetown's nepotism clause, which cracks me up every time I say that. But those positions were not announced, which is a little bit interesting. I mean, I don't think this is telling tales. I mean, I've seen Jonathan Wallace on campus. I think there's a sense that he's still going to be around, and what role exactly is unclear. But whatever the reason they chose not to make that announcement today, maybe we'll never know. I mean, maybe we won't know till opening day, or we get the media guide what his exact role is. But that's another one. And then there's the assistant. And, you know, again, these are not positions where they're going to make or break the situation. It's just more about how is Georgetown handling their business? What are they doing? And I think it was interesting that they didn't make those announcements. Not sure why. You would think they'd be in place by now, but they chose not to.
My understanding throughout the whole process was that they didn't want to make an announcement until they had the staff in place. So these three guys are going to be the three assistants. I don't think anything that's going to happen in the near future is going to change the roles of these three. Perhaps if they could have lured a better recruiter, then maybe Orr would have moved to some special bench role. I don't know. But these three guys are obviously going to be the three assistants, the three guys that are going to be on the road recruiting. From what I understand, Wallace is still going to be there in some sort of special assistant role. And a name that I've also heard that will be part of the staff in some sort of operations or compliance capacity is a guy by the name of Bill Howze, or Howze, H-O-W-Z-E. In case that name doesn't ring a bell, he was with the Hoyas in the past under JT3, then left to join Ronnie Thompson at Ball State.
Yeah, and since then, he was there with Ronnie for 1 year, and based on, what did I look up, his LinkedIn page, or I don't know. He's not been in coaching since then, right? As far as we can tell?
As far as I know.
And that was a decade ago. So, you know, I always try to look at these things like, okay, look, you know, somebody who could be completely outside of the situation may have the best view of what needs to be done. That in and of itself is not a disqualifier to me, but it is sort of interesting that they're going back to somebody who has some connections to the program, once again, sort of staying with the past on some level, it would appear, and somebody who has not been part of the program or part of college basketball, period, in several years. It makes it loose.
Well, look, let's just call it what it is. I mean, it's a connection to the Thompsons, right? So, as much as I think the fan base would have preferred to see some sort of I'm not going to say departure, but some sort of line drawn in the sand between the program and perhaps JT2. I think that's certainly not the case. I think that perhaps those lines have been blurred even more so now with Ewing as the head coach. Maybe it's for the better. Who knows? But it seems to me that the Thompson family is here. They aren't going anywhere, even though John Thompson III will not be around. I think we're going to see a lot of JT2 at the games and such, and I think we're going to see more of Ronnie Thompson as well.
All right, well, you just mentioned Ronnie Thompson, so let's just talk about that a little bit. again, he's not officially on the staff, but I don't know. You've heard some things. I've heard some things. He's around. it seems like he's around and not just purely as a, hey, I have a key to the building and I'm here to work out. Seems like he's around in some capacity to, I don't know, help Ewing. I don't think I'm talking to school here. What's your sense of that? Is this a nothing burger? Is this just like, well, he was already around under JT3 and he's still around, or is this something else?
No, I think it's more than a what's that word? Nothing burger? No, never ordered one of those. I think he's gonna be around more in, you know, I don't know whether it's not an official, whether it's official capacity or not. Who knows? But I don't know what that role will be, whether it's a consulting role to Ewing himself or whether it's someone to deal with the media, perhaps. I mean, he's a TV guy right now. He's an engaging, affable. I'm certain that he has Georgetown's best interests at heart, obviously. So I'm not saying this is a bad thing. I just think that, you know, as far as a like I said, the link to the Thompsons is there, and I think it's going to be stronger now than perhaps it was before. You know, without knowing that much about the Thompson family dynamic, it would just seem to me on its face that Ronnie is perhaps more in line with JT2's way of doing things than perhaps JT3 was. But that's speculation, and you know, I guess we'll just have to see what happens.
Yeah, and you know, I'm with you on the surface, or not on the surface, in practicality. I don't necessarily know that Ronnie Thompson being around is a bad thing. I've talked to Ronnie a bunch over the last couple of years while I would do some work at CSN, and he would be there for Wizards coverage on TV. And, you know, we talked a bunch about Georgetown and other things and, you know, the Wizards and so on. And I think he, you know, knows what he's talking about, but, you know, and I don't think he's any kind of fool by any stretch of the imagination. I think he knows what he's doing. I mean, he obviously has not been coaching since the 1 year stint with Ball State, but he's been around. He's been doing national games for, I don't even know, NBC Sports and some others. So he's clearly been around the game. He's been around the program and all that. I just think it goes back to the point that we've seemingly talked about. You talked about a few minutes ago. We seemingly have talked about this for months. It is just sort of that connection to the Thompsons. Like you move on from John Thompson the third, but have they really moved on? And when you hired Patrick Ewing, the sort of, you know, de facto son, another de facto son of Big John, it definitely was a signal that, hey, they're not moving dramatically, but even still, Ewing's his own man. He's coming from the NBA. Maybe he's going to bring in his own worldview. I don't know. And maybe he will. We still don't know. We still don't have a clue what Patrick Ewing, the coach, is really going to do. But the fact that, like you said, not just, you know, potentially Ron Thompson being around, this other guy, Housie, whatever his name, I'm sorry if I'm saying that name wrong, he's around, you know, and so on. It is more ties to the way things were as opposed to a clean slate that I think a lot of people, myself included, were kind of interested to see.
I don't disagree, and I'm sure that the fan base isn't going to be that pleased to see that around. But at the end of the day, at least these people care about Georgetown. And that's not to say that, you know, the other guys don't care about Georgetown, but John Thompson Jr., Patrick Ewing, you know, Ronnie Thompson to that extent, Jonathan Wallace. I mean, these guys they want Georgetown to succeed. You know, they're Hoyas, you know, pretty much. And they have more at stake than just like another notch on their resume. So yes, I completely get those fans who are like, oh, you know, this is tired. This is just more of the same, blah, blah, blah. Totally get it. But on the flip side, I think it's nice to have some people there who are really invested in the program, and perhaps more importantly, the school as well. Cause, as much as we can be cynical about recruiting, I think selling the school and the tradition of the school, is still a pretty important factor.
I think you make a good point there, but at the same point, it comes down to sort of doing the autopsy on the end of the JT3 era and what went wrong there in the last few years. Was it his coaching? we've made that argument to some degree. Was it his recruiting? We've made that argument to some degree. But the culture over there, how things got done, a little bit behind the times on certain ways, and that would be my only thing. Yes, these guys are maybe invested in it, but they're also sort of seemingly, again, it's June 26th. The season is months away. We haven't talked to anybody, or at least I haven't, since Patrick Ewing was introduced. So for all I know, Patrick Ewing's going to come out in a couple of weeks or before the season starts and give us all some huge explanation of what his plan is and how visionary it is. And maybe he's the next Mike D'Antoni. I have no idea. You know what I mean? Maybe he's the guy who's taking basketball to the next level in the 21st century. But at the moment, based on the information we have, it just feels like it's more of the same. And I think that part of that more of the same on some level, that culture thing, is part of what happened to Georgetown these last few years. Unless you got anything else to say on that front, I'd say we sort of close up here with actually the players that they've brought in and any sense of that. But you got any other final thoughts on the coach?
No, I just that I agree with you. I mean, I think fans that were expecting a 180 with the new hire as far as a way of doing business at Georgetown, that's clearly not going to be the case. I think what really is going to be of interest to the fans this coming season is going to see the different schemes that Ewing brings to on the court, the offense, the defense, the off the court stuff, I think is going to remain pretty similar.
All right. So as far as the players go, and I don't know, do you have a roster in front of you? Because I don't, but I can try to pull.
Does anyone? I mean,
I know, like, don't you, I feel like I even have it somewhere in my bookmarks, sort of the updated.
I have it.
Okay. So, they've added a few pieces, some for this year, some for next year, that, you know, players have to wait a year. In terms of this year, let's catch everybody up to speed, myself included. They brought in the kid, but Blair, the point guard from Canada, right? They brought in Trey Dickerson, another guard who's been all over the map, but he's from New York, was at school up in the Dakotas last year. He's coming in as a grad transfer. What else am I missing? They got any in terms of this
well,
year?
Well, they held on to Anton Walker.
Oh, the kid, and then the 7'3" kid.
Sodom.
So that's the four players coming in. Is that am I right on that?
Yeah, and there's still the question of this Malinowski kid from William and Mary, whether or not he is going to play next season or not. I've heard still. It could be next season, but most likely the next. Like, it's a very bizarre situation. And we still have no confirmation from the school, although we'll probably never get it, regarding Trey Mourning.
Yeah, actually, and I want to go back to Trey Mourning in just one second. But so with that said, you posted today, because John Rothstein did his early predictions for the Big East. And the Big East is a 10-team league, for those who don't remember. And he said that his prediction is that Georgetown will finish in 10th place. You know what? It's hard to argue against that, even though DePaul is historically the owners of that 10th spot. And I'm not even 100% sure where DePaul's at with their recruiting. But just, you know, Georgetown was already coming off a rough year. And, you know, they lose Peak Pryor, if nothing else. And they've not added anything that we can tangibly say is a huge help. You never know how the Govan and Derrickson's improve and all that, but it just sort of goes to show you that Georgetown appears to be in for a rough season as we talk right now, unless something dramatically changes in terms of players they add for right now. How many – you've got the list there. How many spots do they actually have open right now?
Well, again, I mean, we don't know what the deal is with assuming Malinowski is occupying a scholarship, and assuming Trey Mourning is occupying a scholarship, then they currently have one open scholarship for 2017.
So, I mean, you've probably looked into it more than I have. Just a little bit I saw, Malinowski, I'm going to guess he's not going to play this year, but okay, let's just say it's up for debate, even if he's not here. So that means you've got two spots. I think one thing that's key, you don't want to just take somebody to fill out the roster. You need people to play, but if you take somebody who is not up to snuff for the Big East play, and now all of a sudden you're sort of stuck, then you could potentially lose a scholarship for next year. And considering Ewing and his staff got a relatively late start because of, you know, he wasn't in college basketball before, I think they may just be better off waiting and building towards getting some 2018 recruits to come in, especially if, again, we're just talking about somebody on the margins. You need enough players to play, but you know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't, like, burn a scholarship or two just to get somebody in for now if they're not really, you know, a Big East caliber player.
I don't know. We're gonna have half a dozen scholarships open for next season. I think taking a sort of best available at this point, like who's left out there, wouldn't be so bad, especially if this best available could be a decent contributor in a few years, or next season, or even this season. You know, given the lack of top to bottom talent on this roster, I would rather them take a shot on a kid who's a 3-star or a 4-star now, then, for example, leave the scholarship open and hope that they can fill it next year.
Well, how many 3 or 4? I mean, and I don't know. I'm not saying you do, but how many 3 or 4 stars are still even out there this late date?
Well, you have the Rafis, you know, Andre Rafis, who visited this past weekend. The point guard from California, I think it's Miles Oliver, visited this weekend and got an offer. I'm not sure how
if you get a 3 or 4 star recruit, that's not the same thing. I'm saying, don't just take a body. If you got a guy who you would have recruited 6 months ago for one of these spots, that's great. I'm just saying, don't feel compelled to fill up that space just to fill up the space because you only have 11 people this year. That's all I'm saying. If you can get a guy who's
absolutely. I think Rafis was a guy that we had recruited previously, you know, under JT3. I think if he wants to come, you take him. There's people have, you know, pros and cons about his game, but people have pros and cons about any kid's game at this point. I think he's one that you take. The Oliver kid is the point guard out of California, who's like a marginal 2-star, 3-star prospect. He might fall into your category where you're just getting a warm body who can bring the ball up the court. I don't see how he could contribute not only this year, but really moving forward, given our sort of what I'll call mediocre depth or depth of mediocrity at the guard spot. You know, he doesn't really help there other than just being another person. But anyway, if we're talking, we're going to have podcasts about how this team is going to actually perform or how we think they're going to perform moving forward. But I do think that we are obviously actively looking to fill the last one or two scholarship spots. So I think it's not going to be a sense that we're kind of just carrying, we're going to carry one over into 2018.
Let me just go back to one thing here. You mentioned Trey Mourning before. You guess you've got a sense that he actually may be staying. At the end of the year, the report was, we were told, hey, Trey Mourning's going to transfer out. Mazel tov, go live your life, do what you got to do. But now the sense is he's going to stay. Is what you're hearing, and again, we have not heard
the only report that we went off of regarding Mourning's intent to transfer was I forget what Brandy Sims, whoever someone posted on Facebook that Mourning was leaving. You know, we obviously never got anything official from the school. No big surprise there. But from what I understand, Mourning intends to play for the Hoyas next season.
Okay, well, so based off of that, and I, you know what, so much has happened in the last few months since then. I'm trying to even remember what conversations I had with anybody, but I can't bring that back. I don't remember what I did yesterday, let alone 2 months ago. So I won't try to speculate on that. But I guess I was sort of wondering if he was in fact leaving, and now that he's staying, and this is again maybe nonsense, maybe he never was leaving. But if that was happening, I think that would be pretty interesting. Situation there when you factor in all the players involved, meaning JT3, Patrick Ewing, potentially Alonzo Mourning, and what that signals. Again, we had that stuff at the end of the year where we had, you know, Reggie Williams and Michael Graham speaking forcefully about how they weren't really a big fan of what was happening with JT3, you know, especially dealing with them, the past guys. And you know, then we had the whole thing with Trey Mourning where he doesn't even play even a minute at his own dad's tournament down there in Miami this year when they played LaSalle, right? And I think, you know, I don't know if that was a bone of contention, but I could imagine that it would be. So it would be interesting if Trey Mourning ended up staying. But again, I guess we're saying we don't know for sure he was leaving. But I just think that I think that would be interesting if, in fact, that's the way that it all went down.
As I look at this roster, and again, maybe I'm just crazy and it's late and I've had a long day, but I don't think we're that bad. if Jesse can make a leap and Derrickson can stay healthy and actually be a power forward, which he wasn't able to do in JT3's system, I don't know where the scoring is going to come from yet. That's going to be a problem. But maybe if Antoine Walker and Caleb Johnson can put it together, form some sort of, you know, solid guy on the wing combined, and then you've got Mosley can make a leap, and maybe this Dickerson kid is actually pretty good, you know, and maybe I'm grasping at everything here, but I think we can surprise some people.
Well, I'll just say this.
Certainly, there's nowhere to go but up, really. I mean, I think this is the first time that I can remember in a long time that we really have zero expectations.
And you know, absolutely. No, this is a new point. I mean, even last year, I think a lot of us were optimistic about their hope, about what they could do. I think the thing about this year's team is you can't point to any single player and say, you know what, at least we know DSR is going to get 18 points a game. At least we know LJP can get to the basket and can score. There's nobody on this team we can point to. Derrickson and Govan at times last year definitely put up points. And you know,
I can tell you this. There's no team, there's no guy on this team that will average 18 points per game.
Yeah.
You could look at it the other way. I mean, I don't see, to your point, you're right. I mean, there's no guarantees from anyone on this team. No one has been consistent since they've been at the school. But maybe that's kind of what I like about it. It's kind of all like a bunch of wild cards. And then you've got Ewing, who's a wild card in himself. We don't know what's going to be out there. So I'm just going to keep an open mind to it.
You do that. I think the guy for me, when you put it all together in terms of Ewing, I think Jonathan Mulmore to me is the most interesting player because he's one of those guys who he looks like he can play, but he just doesn't look like he was a right player for what JT3 flow typically is. This guy's an up-tempo point guard. Now, Patrick Ewing has said he wants to go up-tempo. If Mulmore gets back to being the scorer that he was on the JUCO level, and again, that's a whole different deal, but you know what I mean? If he looks more like that guy, then maybe his presence helps push the pace that Ewing's desiring and gets everybody else involved and yada, yada, yada. All of a sudden, maybe there's some offense going. He, to me, would be is the most interesting, if not, like I said, if nothing else, just to see what Ewing is trying to accomplish and can he accomplish. And if he does, hey, that's interesting. You know, hey, look, Jagan Mosley, he'll be better. We don't know where Trey Campbell's deal is, dealing with his injuries and so on. And, you know, Caleb Johnson kind of waiting for that breakout to happen. So, yeah, there's hope, but there's just not a lot of building blocks that we can go like, oh, yeah, that guy will give you.
We'll continue this conversation when we do season previews and roster deconstruction, all that stuff. I think if we just want to quickly just put a cap on the coaching staff news, which I guess is the point of this podcast, in my opinion, I for fans that are kind of reacting to this news, it's like a big meh. I get it, but let's see what happens on the court before we end off the court with perhaps some recruits that might commit in the next few weeks or months or what have you before we cast judgment.
Before I kick you out of here, you messaged me the other day and had some nice things to say about Tim Frazier, the Wizards' new point guard who was with the New Orleans Pelicans, a team that you pay a little bit of attention to. Would you like to explain to the Wizards Nation why you think Tim Frazier is potentially a helpful player?
Frazier's good. I've been to a number of Pelicans games, and he was a big contributor for them. He is a, you know, rugged, speedy point guard, tends to make the right decisions with the ball. You know, I don't know what his assist to turnover ratio, any of that nonsense is, but he's a good player. You know, I think that the reason why the Pelicans got rid of him was nothing due to what he did on the court, but was really more of his $2 million a year price tag. Pels wanted to clear some cash. They still need to go after Drew Holiday and what have you. But Frazier's good. I think the Wizards are not going to have any issues at the backup point guard spot with him. He's quick. He can get to the hole. He can knock down a shot. I think he'll be a fan favorite there.
Fan-freaking-tastic. I appreciate that. Basically, we just did an entire Georgetown podcast just to get you to say some good things about somebody the Wizards acquired. So, appreciate everybody.
You're welcome.
Appreciate everybody dealing with that long foreplay to get to the good stuff. All right, man. Appreciate it. You know, if you're listening to this, you already know to go to casualhoya.com for all your Georgetown news, notes, nonsense. That's your motto, right? News, notes, and nonsense?
At this point, we're just nonsense.
If it's not your motto, I think it should be. All right, man. Appreciate it. We'll talk later.
Always a pleasure.
Everybody just Deal gets open for three. Dagger!
Long drive, long bounce shot. Dagger!